name, and those who know your name put their trust in you, O Lord. For you have not forsaken those who seek you. If you were unfortunate enough to be here in April when I gave part one of the three-part series, the lesson that was about how science and religion complement each other, the good, you are equally unfortunate tonight in that you will hear the part two, which is the bad. Broadly, the topic tonight is lessons from the history of science and religion. And the plan is for July 11th to finish with part three, the ugly, which will be about the modern war between science and religion. Trust the science. Is this not the rallying cry of our times? I don't know how well you can see these, but we've got articles. Science isn't always perfect, but we should still trust it. Biden's big science challenge, increasing public trust. Learning to trust science with your life. And Nature Medicine, in a play on the In God We Trust, says, in science we trust. Whom do you trust more? The nurse with the stethoscope thingy? Or the gruffy construction worker? Well, the correct answer is the nurse. Go nurse, right? Whom do you trust more? The scientist pouring the chemical into the other chemicals? Or the lawyer? Yeah, this one's obvious. Please do not call him Alabama. You know, the thing about trust the science is that it's a call to trust people we don't know about things we don't understand. Trust the science largely means trust the scientist. On this trust thing, I want to do this. I don't know how well you can see this. Every year, this group comes out with what's called the Veracity Index, and they ask about 1,000 adults this question. Now, I will read to you a list of different types of people. For each, would you tell me if you generally trust them to tell the truth or not? And, of course, the nurses love this because every year, nearly, it's the nurses at the top of the list. So you've got nurses at like 96%, doctors at 92%. It's interesting that people trust nurses more than they trust doctors. Teachers, engineers, that's right. Professors, scientists, but notice here the hard sciences. The medical sciences, the engineers, the professors, the scientists are all way up here at the top. And you keep going down the list, judges, armed forces, members, police, and then, sorry, Jeff. I mean, you're down here at 62% with television news readers and the old ordinary man and woman on the street. Civil servants, pollsters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all the way down to the end, of course. It's politicians generally and advertising executives. A funny thing there, one of my kids said in the van the other day, I think I want to be in advertising when I grew up. And I said, yeah, no one's going to trust you. this was 2018, and 2020, not much changed. Engineers gained a little ground. Go engineers. There were still nurses at the top, and I'm sorry to tell you, Jeff, it was a rough 2 years, because now you're below the ordinary man and woman on the street. And advertising executives are still at the bottom. But do you see the problem? If you can trust this data, when a clergy, when a preacher says something, and when a scientist says the opposite, people will be more likely to trust the scientist. So let's just ask a question that to many would be blasphemy. How trustworthy is science? The answer is going to be generally yes, it's trustworthy, but not always. And so what I want to do real quick is to give you a little bit of context about science and just to plant the seed in your mind that just because it's science doesn't mean it's trustworthy. Let's look over the last 1,000 years. Science has always changed, and it will always change. I want to point to you now to 7 different scientific theories that have been believed over the last 1,000 years. Let me emphasize, the point here is not to mock anyone, because it is almost certain that you and I and everyone in this room currently believe some scientific theory that 1,000 years from now, no one will believe anymore. So we're not trying to mock people. We don't want to be mocked, so we will not mock. But I do want to point out that science is fluid. It changes. Spontaneous generation, there was the belief that matter, life, could just poof, come on the scene. And if you remember from our last sermon, Pasteur's experiment proved unequivocally that life does not just appear. Maternal impression, not too long ago, people believed that the mother's thoughts during pregnancy affected the baby, and her bad thoughts would create genetic deformations in the baby. That, of course, has been bypassed by genetic theories. Classical elements. It was believed for a long time that there are only 4 things that create everything in the world: air, earth, fire, and water. Of course, this has been superseded by modern chemistry. The geocentric universe, for many years, believed that the Earth is at the center of the universe. This was made obsolete by Copernicus, and we will come back to this one at the end. The flat Earth theory, the theory that the Earth is just a plane or a disc, and boy, you better not walk too far, you're just going to fall right off. This, of course, has been outdated by, well, everything. The miasma theory of disease. It was believed not too long ago that bad, quote, night air caused disease. And you can't see the picture. This is from Wikipedia, but it's like this weird, grim reaper-looking thing in the night coming. And they believed, and according to their scientific theories, that that's what caused disease. And it has been rendered obsolete, of course, by modern germ theory. And finally, why do you get toothaches and gum disease and tooth decay? Well, not too long ago, they would tell you it's because you have worms in your teeth. But what about 1,000 years from now? I mean, are we not wise? Are we not smart? Are we not better than those scientists in the past? Well, let's think about this. How do you turn a frog into a prince? If you're Disney, you have the princess kiss the frog. According to evolution, to get a frog to turn into a prince, you just give it a few million years. Do we really think 1,000 years from now evolution will be at the top of the scientific theories? Or will they have by then realized the sheer impossibility of it? What about the Big Bang Theory? 1,000 years from now, will the main theory for how we all came to be one that essentially violates every principle of thermodynamics? It is a self-contradictory theory. Are they going to believe it in 1,000 years? What about the theories that even today are laughed at, like multiverse? There's this theory out there that says that your universe that you live in now is just one of many. And this is mocked even by modern scientists. You have to think in 1,000 years. This one is on the chopping block to be laughed at as well. And if I haven't made the point yet, hopefully this will nail home The point, if you want to look at why science is not worthy of blind faith, look at nutrition science and weather. In the 70s, they say eggs are good for you. Then they say eggs are bad for you. Then they're good for you. Then they're bad for you. Same with coffee. Good, bad. Did you know that if you check the forecast 3 days ago, I'm a golfer, so I know every day's forecast. 3 days ago, today was going to be sunny. I haven't seen a wink of sunshine today, and it's rained all day. This is not to mock the meteorologists, but even with all our radars and our instrumentation and our knowledge, we can't predict the weather 3 days from now. You telling me you're going to tell me what happened with certainty 13 billion years ago? We need a little perspective. So for the rest of the sermon, I want to present to you four, in the words of Tim Harford, the podcast guy, four cautionary tales. And the first three of these cautionary tales, the focus is going to be cautioning us against a trust in science that is not balanced with morality and with a respect for God's word. And cautionary tale number four will caution us against forcing the scriptures to agree with current modern scientific theories. We will look at the Bible and history for our cautionary tales. Number one of four, bloodletting. Did you realize that even into the late 1800s, yes, 150 years ago or less, a common procedure that goes all the way back to Jesus' time was bloodletting? Oh, you're sick. Here's what we need to do. Let's drain your blood. So come here and we'll just take the knives to you, or what's even more disgusting, let's just throw some leeches on you and suck your blood away. Why? Well, surely it's bad blood. Now, there are, of course, diseases with bad blood, but of all of them, the percentage is very low. Generally, you need your blood. Yet the science said, the blood's got to go. Get the blood out. And if you recall, if you were here last Sunday morning, you remember the wise man's house on the sand, and we said, dude, if you had just read your Bible, you might have learned that's a bad idea. So it is with this. I have no explanation why, especially because it seems like in history most people were religious. But you just got to say, hey, if you had just read your Bible, maybe you would have known that the life is in the blood. Genesis 9, verse 4, but you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is, its blood. Leviticus 17, for the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I have given it to you upon the altar to make atonement for your souls. For it is the blood that makes atonement for the soul. It is the life of all flesh. Its blood sustains its life. Therefore I said to the children of Israel, you shall not eat the blood of any flesh, for the life of all flesh is its blood. Whoever eats it shall be cut off. And in Deuteronomy 12, it's repeated again. Only be sure that you do not eat the blood, for the blood is the life. 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm counting five times that they had an opportunity to look in the Bible and realize, you know, this whole let me get all the blood out of you thing, maybe that's not such a good idea. It is just my personal opinion. But I believe this has, in fact, application to the modern abortion debate. It seems to me that anything that has blood is alive, and therefore taking the life of anything that has blood would be taking a life. And one of you can speak of if you remember where this was, but I think I was driving down the parkway and I noticed these new billboards that was said something about maybe there's a heartbeat or maybe even that there's blood is some number of days after conception. It was very few days. So, in my opinion, this concept has a tremendous import into the abortion debate that seems to continue in our country. Cautionary tale number two, eugenics. From the Encyclopedia Britannica, eugenics, the selection of desired heritable characteristics in order to improve future generations, typically in reference to humans. The term eugenics was coined in 1883 by British explorer and natural scientist Francis Galton, who, influenced by Charles Darwin's theory of natural selection, advocated a system that would allow the more suitable races or strains of blood a better chance of prevailing speedily over the less suitable. Social Darwinism, the popular theory in the late 19th century that life for humans and society was ruled by survival of the fittest, helped advance eugenics into serious scientific study. In the early 1900s, by World War I, many scientific authorities and political leaders supported eugenics. However, it ultimately failed as a science in the 1930s and 1940s when the assumptions of eugenicists became heavily criticized and the Nazis used eugenics to support the extermination of entire races. Margaret Sanger, who in some way or another, remotely, I think, is associated with the Planned Parenthood movement, is quoted, I believe, that eugenics is the most adequate and thorough avenue to the solution of racial, political, and social problems. If you believe that a man is simply a glorified bacteria or an advanced monkey, if you believe that social Darwinism and survival of the fittest are ideals that govern the human condition, if you believe that the gene pool of mankind plots the destiny of mankind, then let me suggest to you that the logical conclusion is that the gene pool must be cleansed. To me, it seems that eugenics is a natural, logical, and necessary conclusion of the idea that you are no different than an advanced monkey. Acts 17:26, and he has made from one blood every nation of man to dwell on the face of the earth. 1 Samuel 16:7, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Exodus 22:21, you shall neither mistreat a stranger nor oppress him, for you are strangers in the land of Egypt. Romans 10:12, there is no distinction between Jew and Greek, for the same Lord over all is rich to all who call upon him. And of course, Genesis 1:26 and 27, then God said, let us make man in our image. When science and scientists abandon moral foundations, you get science and scientists who promote eugenics. Science, like any pursuit of man, is only as good as the scientists who pursue it. Moral scientists will pursue moral science. Immoral scientists will pursue immoral science. Only the healthy seed must be sown. Check the seeds of hereditary disease and unfitness by eugenics. This causes us today to recoil with disgust. But this was real science less than 100 years ago. Cautionary tale 3 of 4, gender. I'll go through the verses first. Genesis 1:27. So God created man in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Genesis 5:2, it's repeated. He created them male and female. and blessed them and called them mankind in the day they were created. In Romans 1:22, professing to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. Therefore, God also gave them up to uncleanness in the lusts of their hearts to dishonor their bodies among themselves. This has been in the news quite a bit lately. For example, there's this one story. I don't keep up with politics anymore, so these people are really unknown to me. But there's someone named Marjorie Taylor Greene. I think she's a congresswoman from Florida. And she had an office across the hall from someone else. Her name is something, Marie Newman from Illinois. And this Marie Newman in the blue dress here from Illinois, she has a daughter, I think, that's transgender. And this lady, the congressman from Florida, kind of a firebrand conservative, I believe, put a sign outside of her office that said, "There are two genders, male and female. Trust the science," which I have to laugh at, you know, the trust the science thing. But you look at the headline of the story, Marjorie Taylor Greene blasted for attacking colleague's transgender daughter. Sickening, pathetic, unimaginably cruel. You know, let's just step back for a second. Mankind has created many unimaginably cruel things. Putting a sign outside is not one of them. You know, and you get these, I don't know if you've seen these gender-neutral restroom signs where you have the woman and the man and the half of both. Get ready to see more of that. You know, I have always thought and understood from whatever it was, seventh grade or ninth grade biology, that, you know, if you had two X chromosomes, you're a woman, a female. And if you have an X and a Y, you're a male. But modern science is trying to blur these lines, and hopefully you can see these well. Scientific American, stop using phony science to justify transphobia. Actual research shows that gender is anything but binary. I would have thought gender is not anything but binary, but they say it's anything but binary. Really? What science says about sex and gender amid Marjorie Taylor Greene and Marie Newman dispute? And you can't read this. Let me just read the first line of the article. However, experts, I can't read this here. Anyway, the experts basically say there is no binary one or the other. Up here, this top one. U.S. proposal for defining gender has no basis in science. A move to classify people on the basis of anatomy or genetics should be abandoned. So you can't use anatomy or genetics. One in six Gen Z adults are LGBT, and this number could continue to grow. I don't know exactly which generation is Gen Z. Is that the Sully Woodley, Elizabeth Alexander generation? Or is this the my kids' generation? I don't know. And finally, there's this one here. This guy says, the gender spectrum. A scientist explains why gender isn't binary, and you might not be able to read this, but he has this essentially graph where on the left side is female and on the right side is male. So way over here on the left side are super females, and way over here on the right side is, like me, a super male. But right here in the middle, it says, people exist between male and female. I have no idea what that means. And my point here is caution. We must beware that secular humanists and secular scientists have a vested interest in convincing all of us that science shows a spectrum of gender. That gender is non-binary and that it is scientifically inaccurate to claim there are only two discrete genders. In my opinion, really modern times, the scientists tend to follow the prevailing culture. If the prevailing culture is moral, the scientists will be moral. If the prevailing culture is immoral, guess what the scientists will be? Largely immoral. You know, we have seen God created them male and female, and we need to, first of all, be cautioned against this, but second of all, be prepared. Because I believe, and I imagine most of you do as well, this is only going to get worse. And if you would just spare me a couple minutes, just a little personal thing. Allison and I moved to town 17 years ago. 16 years ago, I took a job at Dynetics. This is not the last slide, don't get excited. I took a job at Dynetics. And when I hired on to Dynetics, one of their contributions, local contributions, was to Way FM. Now, forget for a second what you think about Christian radio. The point is, the company I worked for 16 years ago, Dynetics, thought Way FM worthy of $1,000 a year. Well, our company was bought out by another large defense contractor last year, and now I am fortunate enough, quote unquote, to receive corporate emails from Leidos. And this one I got either Thursday or Friday. And if I don't know, you might not be able to see this well either, but according to this Leidos Twitter feed, they put this in the email. It's been quite a year, but still we, that must be a Gen Z thing, stand proud to support the LGBTQ community for Pride Month. Yay, it's June. They took one of the best months of the year, and what'd they do? They turned into Pride Month. More at Leidos.com/pride. Leidos inclusion, Leidos pride. And we get our rainbow at the top of our corporate building. And it's exciting to know that I learned in this email that I can now update my pronouns. I wonder if there's a link on Leidos.com/traditional values. Can I go to Leidos.com/traditional morals? Why do we uphold moral depravity and minimize moral goodness? We should all be reminded of the prophet Isaiah, who said, "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." Cautionary tale 4:4, the geocentric universe and the scriptures. This guy, Aristotle, 400 years B.C., so that's 2,500 years ago, proposed a model that said the earth is the middle of the universe. The sun moves around the earth, the moon moves around the earth, the stars move around the earth. About 800 years ago, this guy, Thomas Aquinas, influenced the Roman Catholic Church to accept Aristotle's belief that the earth is in the middle of the universe. Then this guy, Nicholas Copernicus, came around about 400 years ago and suggested that the earth moved despite all the prevailing scientific and religious belief that the earth was immovably fixed in space. In fact, you can look at some quotes from Luther and Calvin. I won't go read all these, but you know, Luther says there's talk of a new astrologer who wants to prove that the earth moves and goes around instead of the sky, the sun, and the moon, and you come down to the bottom, and he says, you know, they try to be clever and invent something special, and the way he does this must need be the best. The fool wants to turn the whole of astronomy upside down. However, as Holy Scripture tells us, so did Joshua bid the sun to stand still and not the earth. John Calvin said, "By what means could it, the earth, maintain itself unmoved while the heavens above are in constant rapid motion? Did not its divine maker fix and establish it?" And those who supported this, they went to these Bible verses. 1 Chronicles 16, "The world is also firmly established, it shall not be moved." Three quotes from two quotes from Psalm, "Surely the world is established so that it cannot be moved, so that it should not be moved forever." 2 Samuel 2, "The pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he has set the world upon them." Psalm 19 talks about the sun and how the sun runs from one end of heaven and its circuit to the other end. Ecclesiastes 1, the sun rises, the sun goes down, and it hastens. And of course, the verse from Joshua about so the sun stood still. What would we tell these people if we could transport ourselves back 500 years? And they start quoting these verses and telling us, the Bible teaches that the earth is the middle of the universe. What would we say? You know, you're not reading this correctly. You're trying to cram your modern scientific thinking into the Scriptures. And I believe in the same way, we need to be cautious about doing that as well. And in fact, the opposite possibly even true too, that we need to resist the temptation at times to force modern scientific thinking onto the Scriptures. And in fact, this here is one of the main reasons that a lot of atheists exist today, because they go look at 500 years ago and they say, see, the Christians were nuts and they were teaching that the Bible taught that the earth was the middle of the universe. We just need to be cautious not to try and not to be too eager to try to take modern scientific theories and cram them into the Scriptures. How does this apply? Well, the creation of the first human monkey embryos sparked concern. Yeah, I bet it did. You know, it's just my opinion that over the next few years, decades, this whole genetic engineering thing is going to become a big deal. And it is incumbent upon us as Christians to study the Scriptures and to come to solid conclusions about what's moral and what's ethical. I know that Jeff Kaysen has done a lot of good thinking on this topic, and I appreciated one time he sent out a list of his thoughts to me. It was good. In conclusion, hopefully we have seen the need for caution and discernment when viewing the moral and ethical issues of science. Science is neutral. It's not good or bad. Science is not immoral or moral. But scientists are. And we just need to beware that it is foolish to place blind faith in science for the many reasons we've seen tonight. However, we must pin our hopes on a solid foundation of truth and morality. Science can add good things to our lives, of course, but science is no substitute for the eternal greatness of God who offers salvation. If you have a need to come forward right now and confess sins or to become a Christian through baptism, you have that opportunity right now while we stand and sing.